Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Frazier here with you on this Friday morning. And as we do every Friday morning at 7 o'clock, we welcome in our friend Jared Stillman to the program. Fresh off his victory over Joe in this week's competition. Congratulations on your win, Jared. Good morning.
No, it's a good to win. Good to be two out of the last three. You know, Bobby Cox used to always say in baseball that they were always trying to win series.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to try to, you're not going to be able to sweep every series, but you just keep racking up series victories, and things will seem to go your way. And while I would love to be like my Atlanta Braves and win eight in a row, I will take the two out of three, like LSU versus Wake Forest, and feel good about it.
Imagine if I was counting things up like Jared just did.
So you're calling your victory a success, not a failure, like Tennessee's baseball season.
Yeah.
Well, oh, now it's a failure.
Like an
abject failure. I think I wrote abject failure, right? Complete disaster of a season. Collapse.
Just beautiful.
Embarrassment, really.
That's true. Jared, we're glad to have you with us. The DeAndre Hopkins watch continuing on. I think there's a chance it could be continuing on for some time here as we move into July coming up with training camp around the corner. My question for you is strictly the money, because I look at the Titans, Jared, and they're going to have a ton of money available to them next year with contracts coming off the books. We know that.
I mean, they have as much money available to them as they want.
Yeah, I mean, oh, Robbie, you're talking about the cap, Robbie.
They got so much money. It depends on how much money they want to spend, and they got $1.2 billion of my money, so, I mean, they can do whatever they want.
The cap's irrelevant, Robbie. Don't forget that.
So we
Joe, they don't have the cap space to be able to sign DeAndre Hopkins. I just want you to know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We all agree that the cap's a soft cap, Jared. That's been established, buddy.
So it's been reported that the Odell Beckham deal is what he's looking for. I think Charles Robinson called it the starting point on our show a couple of weeks ago. How close to that are you willing to go if you're the Tennessee Titans? If push comes to shove and you know that you're going to have to get in that neighborhood to bring him in, how close to that are you willing to go if you're the Titans?
That's so tough for me to answer, boy. I tell you, that's a really loaded question. And I look at it, you know, from two different ways. Because I asked TD the same question yesterday, and TD said that going into this, he wouldn't have paid the $15 million, but today he would pay the $15 million. And I keep thinking about Floyd and how when the Clowney thing went down, Floyd was not willing to budge a scotch in terms of however much money he was willing to offer Clowney. And when I hear that New England says, hey, we want DeAndre, but it has to be on Bill's terms, I think about, you know, if this were the kind of deal the Titans would be doing, I could see Floyd saying that he'll do a deal, but on his terms. But at the same time, I also remember the first show I ever did with Floyd, like a week after I started working here. And I asked him, I didn't really know him, and I was trying to make some small talk. And I was like, yeah, is Floyd, Titans going to be any good this year? And that was Ken Wisenhunt's disastrous season, Robbie, that you remember that Joe, luckily for his sake, was not a part of. And he looked at me and said, we don't have a right tackle. I was like, that's a pretty important position, huh? He's like, right tackle? I was like, yeah. And so I think back to an argument we got into before the 2020 training camp about whether or not Khalif Raymond could be a good number four receiver. And he just crapped on Khalif Raymond because of the lack of production he had. I mean, right now, Khalif Raymond would be the number two receiver of the Tennessee Titans. And so when I think of Floyd, I think about, you know, if he were GM, would he be on his high horse of, I'm not budging off my offer? Or would he be looking at the wide receiver room saying, we don't have a number two receiver? And our number one receiver played eight games last year and caught 30 balls or whatever it is, and then would budge the $3.5 million or whatever the gap is for Hopkins. A long-winded way of saying, I try to, like, put myself in Floyd's shoes, say, okay, what would you do, old man? And I don't even know what he would do. I think he would stay pat, and he wouldn't go for the 15. But, again, it's not my money, and the cap is fake. So, I mean, I think that I would – I don't know, Robbie. That's why I said it's a very loaded question.
Just do it. I would do it. Just do it.
How many wins do you have right now? How many wins do you have the Titans getting? Like 14 next year, Jared? What's your 11. Okay, so right now, as constructed, you've got the Titans as an 11-win team. Okay, so let's add DeAndre Hopkins. What's your number?
I thought about this, too. I wouldn't say that I would say that they're going to win more than 11. I mean, I didn't have to go over game by game like I did before, but I definitely feel more comfortable in 11 if they have DeAndre Hopkins.
Okay, so you're more comfortable in your incredible Homer Bobo pick with adding him, and that's worth 15 million?
Didn't you do the same thing and have 10?
No, I have 9. I went 9 and 8. I got.
I think it was Adam Vingan that had 10.
Right.
Vingan called me a homer, then did it and had him winning 10 games.
So, I mean, that's the thing, though. Like, if you feel like he's the difference, I mean, we've talked a lot about Jacksonville the last week, and depending on what you think of them, I mean, are they a 10-win team? Are they 11-win team? Are they 12-win team? Whatever it is. Like, if you think DeAndre Hopkins is the difference in you winning the division and not, I mean, isn't that worth $15 million?
I mean, this is the way I look at it. Like, I did a, you know, I looked at his value from last year and the amount of catches that he had, and I know he only played in 9 games, and so if we wanted to make excuses for him, we could, because we could say, well, you know, that was only in 9 games, and if he played 17 games, but, I mean, I think availability counts. But even his production in 9 games was worth, like, 10.875 million is the total. So the difference in what he's worth last year, and which was a down season for him, his value would be, what, $4 million short of the $15 million? And to your point, I mean, it's $4 million. You paid $3.5 million for Jeff Swaim last year. Like, is that gap enough? And the one thing that I keep wondering about is the finance on this, because I think even Joe would agree with me on this, that cash is infinitely more important when it comes to an owner's decision about spending money than cap.
Depending on the owner, I think certainly that's true with many owners. Yes.
So when the Titans said to us that they tried to extend AJ Brown, and I agree that they probably did try, and then, you know, they let the negotiations play them more than anything else. I mean, were they doing that with the assumption that they weren't going to pay Jeffrey Simmons? Or were they doing that with the assumption that they weren't going to have Ryan Tannehill as the starting quarterback this year? Because what I wonder is the budgeting on this. If you were going to pay A.J. Brown $20-plus million, and then you were going to pay Jeffrey Simmons, you know, whatever I think his average out is, you know, 19-something, if you were going to pay those two contracts, well, you only paid one of those contracts. And so that would, in my opinion, it's not like the Titans went out in free agency this year and signed anybody that would represent what they were going to be willing to pay A.J. Brown, and they didn't pay A.J. Brown last year when they were saying that they were going to pay A.J. Brown. So it's a long-winded way of saying that that A.J. Brown money still has to be there. If it was budgeted for, like, that money still has to be there, and if that money is still there, then $15 million for DeAndre is significantly less than the money that would have been budgeted, I would assume, for A.J. So do they not have the money? Because the problem with the – I mean, how much money does the entire receiving room make? Like $4 million?
Not a lot.
I mean, so we're talking about, you know, it's not like we're saying, well, you know, you're – it's not like these – well, you know, Buffalo and Kansas City. And Kansas City's paying Marquez Valdes-Scantling over $10 million. That's more than the entire wide receiving room of the Titans. New England is paying Juju Smith-Schuster and Devontae Parker more money than the entire wide receiving room of the Titans. So the more I think about it, the more I'm like, well, it's not my money and the cap's fake. So 15, sure, do it. I mean, I'm kind of, you know, talking my way back and forth. It's a pretty good topic today on the program, now that I think about
it. So you're going to spend 4 hours on Hopkins? Well, my God, what if we didn't have Hopkins? What if you didn't have Hopkins especially?
Oh, he could do it.
Jeez. Well, I know, but, like, what would the topic be?
So I thought about this last night. I was like, what did we do last year at this time of the year? Because we didn't have a DeAndre Hopkins. And I think the Philip Forsberg contract was – I think we forget how much of a driving topic the Philip Forsberg contract was, which looks silly because, you know, they paid Forsberg and he was reverted back to the same player that he was before he was in a walk year. And nobody talks about that anymore. But that was kind of the thing last year. This year it's DeAndre Watch. I don't know. I'll find whatever the biggest topic is and hammer it into the ground. You guys know me. I mean, I think that's probably my biggest strength.
Jared, last thing for you here. What would you like to see from the Predators this week in the draft? And what I mean by that is not a specific pick or anything, but would you like to see them be aggressive and move up? Would you like to see them hold on to where they are and just use the 13 picks they have, which is more than anybody else. What do you want to see this
trade week? Soros.
Well, there's that too.
So, I mean, like I actually texted Chase because he's got Barry Trotz coming on at 10 a.m. this morning. And I texted him and I was like, will you ask him what he means when, like, what is a big swing? Because I hear this a lot. Like, he said it, like, we're going to take big swings. And then Elliot Friedman said the Predators are going to take big swings. And I'm like, what is a big swing? Like, what is a big swing? Is that trading four picks to try to move up the number eight to take that Russian kid that nobody knows anything about but apparently is a great player? Is a big swing to turn around and use a bunch of those picks and try to get it an Alex DeBrincat? Is a big swing to your point, Joe, to trade Soros? And so I'm going to say this. Like, I don't know enough about this draft. I was actually texting Nick Kieser because he apparently, like, knows the prospects way better than I do. But I don't know anything. I don't know any of these players. I know it's a loaded draft. And I do wonder, like, when it comes to, you know, the volume of the picks, is that better than the high-end quality of the picks? And I use Derrick Henry as the example. If the Titans didn't have three second-rounders in 2016, they would have never drafted Derrick Henry. And so would it be better off with those 13 picks to take as many shots as possible and know that Shea Weber was a second-round pick and Roman Josi was a second-round pick and not to just say, well, we want the number four pick in the draft? I mean, it's a long-winded way of saying, like, I don't know. And I go back to Joe saying the Soros thing, and I talked about this yesterday. I mean, it's like selling a house. I mean, I'm not selling my house right now, but if somebody came up to me and offered me double the value, I'd say, yeah, take it. You want me out by tomorrow? Like, you give me double the value of my house, I'll be out of there, and I'll find another house. And that's how I feel about Soros. If somebody's willing to give me a package that we would look at and say, oh, that's kind of ridiculous, and I would do it. If it's just the trade Soros because his value will never be higher, so take the best you can get now, but it doesn't look like a good package, then I wouldn't do it. So it's a long-winded way, Robbie, of me saying I want to know what the big swings are, and then I want to take the big swings.
Without the quote in front of me, Trotz, when he said big swing, he has said it in the context of, like, to me, I'm pretty sure he was pretty clear on this at least once, big swing as in high ceiling, maybe high risk player, looking at individuals, right? Is that what you took, Robbie? That's what I took out of what he said.
Specifically at forward, at center.
Yes.
So, like, I know this to be true, what I think the Predators' plan is they're going to get as many, you know, high-risk players offensively that have certain skills that can't be taught, and then they're going to expect Andrew Burnett to coach up the other elements of that game. So that, like, they're going to say, okay, like, and I use Elli Tolvanen's shot as an example of this because I think we can agree he's got a pretty electric shot.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of sitting there and John Hines complaining and bitching about all the things that he can't do, I think that they're going to focus on, okay, well, let's get that shot onto the ice, and then Andrew Burnett, you figure out how to use that shot the best, and then you try to flatten out the edges a little bit in order just to make it so he's not a complete liability in his own end, but we're going to take the high-end skill that he has that nobody else has, and we're going to use that, again, instead of John Hines, who's like, oh, we want to be tough to play against, and he can't forecheck the way we want, so ship him off for nothing.
Jared, have a great weekend. Thanks for being with us, and congratulations on 2 out of 3.
Thank you, Robbie. I greatly appreciate it.
Absolutely. Jared Stillman, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check him out today at 2 o'clock. Joe, your thoughts on losing 2 of 3, apparently, to Jared Stillman.
Yeah, I guess he won the series. I should have been counting up all along.
Doing 3-game series? We doing 7-game series? What are we doing?
Best of 97. Chris says, Jared has said he was long-winded twice in this segment. Good luck to anyone listening this afternoon.
615.
If you didn't mention how long-winded you were, you would be less long-winded.
That is true. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Got a lot to react to with Jared there on the Titans. We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 102.5 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. I got some tickets to give away. A pair of tickets to see the Nashville Symphony perform the music of Led Zeppelin coming up at Ascend Amphitheater June 25th. Be caller number 3-615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a pair of tickets to see the Nashville Symphony perform the music of Led Zeppelin at Ascend Amphitheater on June 25th. 615-737-1025. So, Joe, it's been admirable, is probably the word I would use, of how Jared has covered the DeAndre Hopkins situation and how deep he's gone into it the last few days when there's nothing going on around DeAndre Hopkins right now. But I do think the money part of this is really interesting because obviously – DeAndre Hopkins, both from the Titans and the Patriots, has not gotten what he's looking for. Otherwise, he would have signed by now, would be my guess. So, it's clear that the Titans and the Patriots have not come up to what he wants. And Charles basically said on our show yesterday that, you know, it's the team's kind of delaying this right now more so than it is Hopkins based on the market and the deal and all those things. So, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Jared. We know roughly what Hopkins is looking for, and Charles has talked about on our show that the Odell Beckham deal may be the starting point. If you're the Titans, how close to that are you comfortable going? And I'm not even talking with incentives. Just how close to that deal are you willing to go if you're the Titans?
Yeah. Well, look, actually, I kind of agree with Jared's line of thinking, other than, you know, the cap is fake. Crap. I loved yesterday. He's like, all of NFL media is, you know, has been fooled. I'm the one person in the world who knows it's fake, Kapanen. But I kind of agree with the idea, the sentiment of, first of all, if you look at investment in a room, you know, however you want to prioritize the different rooms, you know, I don't think most teams would put receiver room at the bottom of priorities.
Don't think so.
But the Titans right now, you probably kind of expect the quality to reflect to some extent the investment, and it's low. And so, I mean, look, just like he said, and we did that the one day. You went through the list of eight-figure, you know, receivers in the NFL, and there's some doozies in there, you know. So it's like, I mean, I still have my questions about Hopkins at this point, you know, in his career. I think there's a real chance he is the latest Titan receiver who was great elsewhere who comes in here and just kind of looks like a guy. I really think that is possible. But it look, you have done things, even though you've done some things in the last two off seasons to try to pivot to the future. You have a team that, and you may have tried to move people who would make things look different. But bottom line is you have Tannehill back, Henry back, you extended Simmons, you have Byard, you have a team that can win this year. So why would you not do what it takes to get that done? So I think it's easy to talk yourself into, yeah, just give him something like that. Odell, when I saw that number, I was like, geez, really? That's also a guy with, you know, with two straight ACL tears, though.
Right.
It's a little bit different. And it's a guy who speed is an essential part of his game. And as we've discussed with Hopkins, he may age a little better because of just physically what he can do that does not require him to just run past someone.
Well, I mean, bottom line is the contract's handed out this offseason. And because we're talking about the market right now. What is the market right now? Alan Lazard signed a four-year, $44 million deal. That's $11 million per year. Jacoby Myers signed an $11 million per year deal. You know, Juju Smith-Schuster getting paid $8.5 per year from New England. I mean, you don't have to, I think, reach a whole lot to talk yourself into, well, DeAndre Hopkins is better than Alan Lazard, and DeAndre Hopkins is better than Jacoby Myers. You know, Odell Beckham is an interesting one. He's the one that's getting paid $15 million. I just, the more I think about it, the more I'm probably willing to go there if I'm the Titans, just because why not give yourself the best shot? Like, if this is going to be it, and it's going to be Tannehill, and it's going to be Henry and Byard and all these things, and we're changing things up next year, and Will Levis is taking over, this is going to be what it is, why would you not give yourself the best shot? I'm not saying that you have to, like, go out there and offer DeAndre Hopkins $25 million per year and overpay. But I'd probably be willing to sneak into the 15 range just because What if he is the difference between you winning the division and not winning the division? Maybe he is. Maybe he isn't. The injuries concern me. You know, coming off the PED things and what injuries look like after that, that concerns me. There is certainly a way where they could do that and DeAndre Hopkins plays six games and this blows up in their face. It absolutely could happen. But that's a risk I'm willing to take the more I think about it, because to me, if you're bringing all these guys back, why would you not try to maximize what you could be?
Yeah. And so, look, they've gone, they've demonstrated interest, and they've done their best. What concert did they take him to?
It was a CMA Fest, but I think McGraw was out there at one point.
Okay. And he was jamming out to some CMA Fest. You know, they brought him to the facility. Obviously, they're interested. Obviously, we don't know the number. We don't know what they've discussed, what the Patriots have discussed. So, look, it's possible they gave a tremendous offer, and he's still just like, one, maybe holding out for somebody he thinks is more of a contender. Two, just holding out for, he thinks he can get more. You know, I don't know. So I think that they're agreeing in their actions, unless if it turns out that they offered like seven or something.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing is, when this started, I was like, I'd give him like eight, incentives up to 12, something like that, you know. And as time goes on, you're right. You think about it, and it's like there's this gaping hole. I mean, whether you want to acknowledge it or not, everything could break their way in that receiver room. Like I heard D-Mace on Caroline Willing and D-Mace kind of shouting down the idea that this receiver room is, I guess the texter said, trash. So, you know, I mean, to me, that's a childish, Jared-ish kind of take on something. You know,
yeah, we prefer cheeks on the show.
Yeah. You know, but could it break your way? Yeah, I think we know what Westbrook Akine is, and he's a good guy to have in your room. And I think Chris Moore is fine. He can go out and be okay. Look, could it break your way with Burks becoming a real difference maker? Could it break your way with Phillips actually being healthy all year and looking like he did in camp and in one game last year? Okay. And then if it keeps breaking your way, McMath, it can do a little bit more than just be a Khalif Raymond who catches like 8-9 passes in a year but maybe makes a couple big plays. By the way, Raymond, 9 catches in 19, 9 catches in 20 here with the Titans. You know, 18-9 a catch, 20.8 a catch. Then he goes to Detroit, he has 48 and 47 catches.
Well,
I mean, last two years he had 1,200 yards and 95 catches. 1,295 and 1,200 in the last, and you know, just 4 touchdowns the last 2 years. Pretty wild, right?
That is wild.
Could McMath break your way? Could Dowell end up being a really nice find? Okay. You put it all together with Chig having a star year, and like you might be all right. But it's still like that's a lot. That's asking a lot.
It's a lot to break your way.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot to break your way. We'll get more into the Titans coming up at 8 o'clock. Teron Davenport will join us. Looking forward to that discussion with him. Coming up next, we'll get into a hire that the Nashville Predators made yesterday and take a look at this coaching staff as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, where their advanced pay by TJ option can save you thousands when selling your home. Make sure you check out next week, next Wednesday at 6 o'clock, draft night in Smashville with myself, Willie Donick, Max Herz, and Chase McCabe, live from Bridgestone Arena for the 2023 NHL Draft. NHL Draft is powered by International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 429, Electronic Express, and Oil Fire Whiskey. Looking forward to that coming up next Wednesday. We are less than a week away from the NHL Draft here in Nashville. Got the awards coming up on Monday, so looking forward to that as well. And Joe, the Preds make another hire yesterday, bringing in Derek McKenzie as an assistant coach. So that rounds out the coaching staff for the Predators. Dan Hynote still here, obviously. Todd Richards still here. And Andrew Burnett being hired as head coach. Derek McKenzie coming over to join him as an assistant coach. He was a player in the NHL for a long time. Played 611 games over 16 years. Atlanta, Columbus, and Florida was where he played. And obviously familiarity with Andrew Burnett, having coached with him in Florida as well. So I kind of figured McKenzie would be a name that he would take a look at. and he has, and Derek McKenzie now joining the Predators as an assistant coach here. So the coaching staff now rounded out, and this could be really interesting. I mean, you've got two holdovers, obviously, from John Hines' staff with Todd Richards and with Dan Hynote, and meshing those guys in with Andrew Burnett the way he wants to do things, and Derek McKenzie, who's obviously familiar with him as well. Going to be interesting to see how the Predators and Andrew Burnett specifically kind of puts this staff together and what he has guys doing out there.
Yeah, so the way Barry Trotz kind of described it at the press conference introducing Andrew Burnett was basically like that Burnett is a power play guy, right? But that's what Burnett did with the Devils this last year. They're very good. So that's where they didn't need someone's. But so technically then, does McKenzie become that? Or is it, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm really interested to see what happens. Like, Burnett has been, you know, such a good power play guy during his tenure here. So I'm interested to see, like, who is actually in charge of running that. I mean,
is it like an OC, but then the coach calls the plays?
Yeah, maybe so.
Is that kind of thing like Andy Reid has an OC, but he's the OC?
Could be. Could be exactly what it is. You know, McKenzie, actually, it's funny. He played with Ryan Johansson for 3 years in Columbus. So
that's wild.
Played with Ryan Johansson. Now he's getting ready to be an assistant coach with Ryan Johansson.
You know, I wonder if he thought Ryan Johansson was a snot-nosed.
Well, maybe. We'll have to ask him at some point. What'd you think? And then Todd Richards was actually his head coach while he was a player in Columbus. So just random facts there that I thought I'd throw your way.
Lots of it's a fraternity.
It is.
Lots of you know, mixing and matching people who know each other. Yeah, there's pre-existing relationships all through this staff.
There is. But the Predators have rounded out their staff, and we'll see what all that looks like with Derek McKenzie coming in as an assistant coach. The draft is next week. They've got 13 picks, 7 in the top 83. We've talked a lot about that and the possibilities that could take place. You know, obviously, we can't sit here today, Joe, and predict exactly what's going to happen and whether or not the Predators are going to move up, what it's going to take to move up, you know, where that spot would be, all those things. But what's your sense of what we could see on Wednesday when this thing rolls around in the first round? And I guess the better way to ask it is, how aggressive do you think the Predators could be, given the amount of picks that they have, given that they do have UC Saros, and Elliot Friedman came on these airwaves this week and talked about how he thinks most of the conversation around UC Saros has been generated by other teams being interested in UC Saros, and it's not like the Predators are just dangling him out there and trying to get the best offer. But I really am interested to see if somebody comes this week with an offer that you can't refuse if you're the Predators. So there's that part of it, but there's also the aggressiveness with Barry Trotz in his first draft. What's that going to look like? And this probably, you know, I think some fans sometimes they look at this and they say, well, why does this matter? It does in the NHL for some reason. Montreal went nuts when they hosted their own draft and were really aggressive. Predators have talked about how, you know, they want to make some splashes when they're hosting the draft here in Nashville. So it can't be the reason you do things, but I do wonder if there's something coming down the pike for the Predators next week.
So you think that they may try to put on a little bit more of a show because it's here?
I do.
Well, to me, it's a failure unless they figure out a way to get Connor Bedard.
Yeah.
I mean, you better get up and get Bedard, man.
He's walking to the Blackhawks brass. Is walking to the stage, and Barry Trotz just comes and spears him right up. No, he's ours.
Oh man,
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they certainly have. I mean, they're gonna be active. What's that?
Is he gonna get booed? Predators fans in the draft room, they trap Bedard, and the whole place just boos.
I hope so.
That'd be awesome.
I mean, that's absolutely essential, right? That's necessary.
Might as well get it started now.
Get used to it.
Be booing him for a while.
Yeah, because, you know, Blackhawk fans, well, they'll keep them out of the building. So, the Preds have a lot of opportunities to, at least they're going to be active, you know, for sure. I mean, the thing about the Saros situation is, first of all, I totally agree with the idea of you're not doing this if you're Barry Trotz unless you're blown away. But also, it seems like right now the expectation is that you're not going to be, and so that you're moving forward, right? So what do you think is going to happen? Like, if you're Barry Trotz at goaltender. What do you think and what do you want to happen down the line at that position? Because we've talked about, you could make the case that the value, the return for him is going to be higher this summer. He's going to be good next year, but right now he's inarguably top three in the league. And also he has 2 years left at $5 million AAV. So right. If you know that the value is probably going to go down after this, what do you think is going to happen at that position? What do you want? I understand there's fans that are like, do not touch him. No, thank you, hands off and all that. Okay. I mean, I guess then you probably expect that you're going to trade Askarov at some point, right? I mean, is that – and then you're going to pay Saros, and you're just – UC Saros is going to be the next Pecorino here. And some fans love that idea, and I get it. It's just kind of the – I mean, I just balk at, like, a long-term $9 million contract for a goalie.
I do, too. I just – You don't have to do it right now. And what I mean by that is, let's say for sake of argument, Barry Trotz agrees with that assessment and he knows that the value will never be higher than it is this summer for UC Saros. You don't have to do it at the draft. And what I mean by that is you could have an asking price right now that's really, really high. And maybe teams balk at it. And you get to free agency, and you come back down then, or maybe somebody gets worn down then and gives you the price that you want to have just because either they can't find a goalie and they think they're a goalie away, or they get through free agency and they don't like what's happened there, or they get to free agency, and this is probably the more likely scenario, they get to free agency, they look at what's out there, and they say, man, do we really want to commit X amount of money to so-and-so or would we rather just pay the price to go get somebody we know is going to be good? So you can get through the draft part of it without having made a move and still get a huge return later this summer. So it makes sense to me, like Elliot Friedman talked about the other day, that you know you're going to have to knock Barry Trotz's socks off if you want UC Saros. Like it makes sense to me to have that approach right now.
Yeah, no, I agree, absolutely. No, and of course, this could certainly happen. So I get, like my question, I would apply it to like just the whole summer,
the whole thing,
this off season. Yeah. You know, I just like if you're not going to get blown away a year from now, you know, if you're going to be less blown away by whatever you see out there for him a year from now, and now you're coming up on he's gonna need a new deal,
right.
I guess you can expect Askarov to keep advancing, and then for him to look more promising to other people. We would have to agree. I mean, we have already, but I just reiterate, like the idea of those two as a tandem over a long period of time is just not realistic.
No, and look, I understand the idea too. Like, I guess in a perfect world, let's say you were going to make the transition, and it was going to go Saros to Askarov at some point. I guess the perfect way to do it would be, like if you're a GM drawing it up, would be for Saros to be here next year, for him to play well, for those young guys to be as good as they can possibly be and see what you can do next year. And then when Askarov is actually ready to play in the NHL, maybe it's the year after that, then it's just that you're not going Saros, fill in goaltender for a year, Askarov, you're going Saros, Askarov. So I guess it makes sense that way. But again, like I don't think you can necessarily think that way if you're a GM. Like you got to maximize what the value is.
And the in-between goalie gives you a nice high pick.
Well, could be that, or Kevin Lankinen is an absolute stud. One of the two.
There's always that too.
It's a really interesting situation, but we're getting ready to find out. I mean, next week's the draft, and you know, every year something happens at the draft. There's always a trade. There's always a couple of moves. It doesn't necessarily have to involve the Predators, but I do think that there are going to be a lot of teams calling them and seeing what could happen. You know, Alex DeBrincat, he might be a candidate to get moved next week as well. Pierre-Luc Dubois, yesterday, Tyler Toffoli came out that he's not re-signing in Calgary, which apparently nobody ever wants to re-sign in Calgary, so poor Flames. But that's not necessarily a name that I would attach myself to if I was the Predators, but he could get moved next week. We'll see.
I prefer Calgary.
I do too. Shout out to Terry Crisp. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it is time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check it out every morning at 745. We will do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now!
Now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Another thing, stop playing us, man. We the Detroit Lions. We the Detroit Lions. Stop playing with us. I don't even watch TV, but I heard everybody already picked the Packers over us. Stop playing with us. That's all I got to say, man. Don't let these tears fool you. It's all dog around this mug. I'm good.
Former.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check it out every morning at 745. Either the Rob Rant, the Rex Rant, the Red Rant. One of us will be ranting every morning here on the show. And, Joe, I promise you, I had this rant in mind before we saw something this morning on the television about a certain Nationals manager yesterday losing his mind on an umpire in the Major League Baseball. I promise you I did. So this has been something that I've kind of been wondering and thinking about for a few weeks here. And it's not a new conversation, but there have been a couple of different instances this year with MLB umpires behind the plate. And we could even take this into the College World Series if we wanted to. But MLB umpires behind the plate really doing a bad job on balls and strikes. And, like, just a consistently awful job. And, you know, we have new technology now, and they've got the K-zone. They've got all these trackers of the baseball that shows where it's crossing the zone, where the strike zone is, all those things. And there was an article that Sports Illustrated put out from last month about an umpire in a Rockies-Mets game missing 20 calls, 20 ball strikes calls in May in a Rockies-Mets game. So, I mean, you got to think about it. What are there, you know, 200 pitches in a baseball game, roughly, around there, 200, 220 somewhere? I mean, 20 is not a gigantic number, but when you break it down percentage-wise, it's not an insignificant number either.
Double-digit percentage of pitches.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's a pretty high percentage. There was a game last week where an umpire missed, I think the count was 17 balls and strikes calls, just according to the little K-zone that they have. And look, I get it. The K-zone's not perfect. Like, it's, you know, it's a specific spot. There are guys that are different sizes. And look, part of baseball, what has made it in some ways cool, in some ways why we're having this conversation today, is human error has always been a part of it. You know, working an umpire has always been a part of it. Really, to me, growing up, I played a lot of baseball. And to me, as long as they were consistent, I didn't really care. Like, if you were calling it the same way for both teams, it didn't really bother me.
And calling this so you can adjust to whatever's the zone.
Exactly. Yeah. But my question is, like, it's 2023. Like, should we still be that way? When we have the technology to assess where the ball's crossing the plate and you can – I mean, they can pinpoint these things exactly where they are. Should it be left up to human error at that point? And this gets into a whole baseball purist conversation, which – it's fine. I mean, there's some people that say umpiring is a part of the game. Missed calls are a part of the game. It always has been. Leave it alone. And there are others that look around and say, what are we doing? Why do we need an umpire to call balls and strikes when we have technology that can do it? I honestly go back and forth on it because I understand both sides of it. But I will say, like, the couple of instances that I've mentioned, with one game where an umpire behind the plate missed 20 of them and the next game where he missed 17 of them, like, in Major League sports, where gambling's a big part of things now, as we know, as we've talked about, where there's so much on the line for players and managers and contracts and money and all this other stuff, that's a lot of missed calls to be having behind the plate there. So I just wonder what this could lead to as this continues to be a popular topic of conversation in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, it's a valid thing to bring up. Yeah, when they went to the whatever they call it in tennis, some people didn't like that, right?
Yep.
I mean, it's a good thing to have. But I also feel like some of those calls, like, tennis is such a hard thing to see some of that stuff, you know, the line. I mean, it's,
some of them are impossible, yeah.
So I feel like that just totally makes sense. I don't know. I mean, my big argument against you is, like, the machines are going to take over soon, man.
I know.
Hey, like, these
– make movies about that stuff.
AI, like, they're going to – like, they're going to write sports writers out. Like, just like, no, I can write a better article than you can about this
exactly.
thing.
Yeah,
there you go, man. I can write a better movie script than you can about this, et
cetera,
et cetera.
Radio programs. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't that. I guess at least we have that. Like, who could possibly replace our
no one
cheeky jokes and you know
one of a kind
mispronunciations and mutes. But I just, but in seriousness, like I don't want the machines to take over. But it would be then you could do. You know, you've got the. I mean, you got the in-between area of, like, challenges
yeah.
and things like that. But, I mean, how much effort has been put into shortening the game?
Exactly.
Like, we can't go the other way there, right?
Right.
To me, it's got to be pick a path.
Exactly. Like, there is a – the challenge element, I think, is fine. But the problem is, like, you're missing 20 balls and strikes. Like, what are you going to do, sit there and challenge every one of them?
Yeah, you know, I mean obviously, there's one, you know, full count – second and third, you're down one in the bottom of the eighth, and then there's a ridiculous high called strike. Man, if you could only – I mean, it's kind of like the NBA with just whatever random foul call
yeah,
you can challenge
just,
now.
That one. That's the one we're challenging.
Which
yeah.
almost never worked, by the way.
Right.
Well, you kind of can challenge right now. I don't know if you guys knew this or not, but in the Arizona Fall League,
yeah.
they're testing something
yeah,
out.
Yeah, they're testing yeah. that. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So, I mean,
yeah.
they did it recently. You can listen to 94.9 The Fan with the Nashville Sounds. They've done that recently where they had a full game where it was all
yeah.
technology. I'm just like, interesting. Because I'm the same way. I like when you have an umpire that can actually call a game. Because you have some balls that are like curve balls or sliders that break over the plate, but they land outside the zone. So then a robot might call out a ball, but in hindsight, it's a strike.
Right. Yeah, there's so much to it. Like, there's like catchers framing pitches. It's an art,
yep.
you know? There's also like, I mean, I'm sorry, but I think part of the enjoyment of baseball is sometimes you piss off an ump and the next pitch is a foot outside. Yeah, strike! And then there's yelling, and then you get Dave Martinez out there, like, getting
Army
on his belly, like, oh, let me see if I can see this with my telescope, you know? I mean, like, but the gambling aspect of it is that's the thing. It's like anybody who's officiating any high-level athletic event is an obvious target.
Yep.
And well, that's been true for a long time. But I just feel like a lot of the soul of baseball is taken out if you don't have a home plate. I mean, Leslie Nielsen at home plate, Naked Gun, you know, dancing around. I mean, come on, man. Like, it's a big part of, like, sports in America is
the
home plate ump.
I know. I mean, that's the thing. Like, first off, you know, I reffed four games of middle school basketball last week. It's hard. Like, it's very difficult. You know, it's easy to sit there and yell. So, like, I don't think anybody has an expectation that the umpires behind the plate should be perfect. But I will say, like, 20's a lot. 20's a lot.
Yeah.
17 missed calls is a lot. I mean, you'd love for it to be, like, 7, 8, somewhere in that neighborhood.
You know what one of the answers is that I think you tie it all together with officiating and stuff is stuff – we've talked about this. I mean, I've been crying about this forever – is more public accountability
yep.
and more like, okay, like – tell us about the demotion or the suspension. I mean, go ahead. Look, these people are public figures, too. People know their names.
Yeah.
John Higgins, college hoops ref. People have known that guy for many years, and he's out there all over the place with his bleached blonde hair out there flopping around. You know, he's one of the best refs in college basketball now, which is scary. But,
a lot of people know Joe West.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people know his
name. The great Joe West. Can't go wrong with that.
Yeah.
I mean – so, to me, it's like more, okay, here's the consequence for
right.
you. Like here's a stated consequence. And also, here, go talk to these reporters. I mean, I'm not saying, okay, like anybody's going to want to, you know, hey, you missed a whole bunch of balls and strays. Talk about that.
Right.
You know, I'm not. But still, like at times, in moments of controversy, stand up there and explain yourself. I mean, more of that, I think, could help.
I don't think it's a conversation that's going anywhere anytime soon because with the more technology that becomes available, and I even think baseball, I mean, baseball's, it's even different than this discussion in basketball or hockey or football just because, like, the rules are what they are. There's a strike zone. There's force outs at first base. Like, there's, I mean, you can miss, I guess, a tag play every now and then, but there's a lot of things that are just like, black and white, like either he's there or he's not. Either it's in the zone or it's not. And I think the conversation around them in terms of the umpiring part of it and officiating part of it, I don't think it's going away anytime soon. I mean, like I said, I grew up playing baseball. Love having umpires. But I do with the technology know that this is a conversation that's not going anywhere.
I'm pro-human. Apparently, you're anti-human. Sean in Murfreesboro says the Sounds every Tuesday and Wednesday have robot umps. I didn't realize that.
I mean,
that's good for you. Why don't you go out there and hang out with the robots then? Then when they take over the world, then you know you can.
They'll like me. They'll
hate
you.
Explain yourself. Yeah, that's true. They'll spare you and kill me.
How can you pull off the hidden ball trick with AI? Come on now,
that's
Robbie.
A good question. Not enough hidden ball tricks in MLB.
I agree.
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get into the Titans. We'll be joined by Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Talking with TD. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.